When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's time for the Wrestling Inc. AEW Dynamite After Show, and have we got a show for you. We've got Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta going at it. We've got Anarchy in the Arena, and we also have a bunch of other great stuff to talk about before we get to all that. Let's chat about some big stuff, though. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by, I thought it was Orange Cassidy, but turns out he's Jimmy Corderas, as well as George Hermosa, coming off of a great job, by the way, hosting the Backlash After Show on Saturday. Great job to both of you. Jimmy Corderas,
yes,
you're upsetting a lot of people right now because there's a narrative that you are anti-AEW, yet here you are sporting their merch. You're ruining the narrative.
Hey, what can I say? I'm not living the gimmick. So I know there's that misconception out there that unfortunately some people take critique and criticism as bashing. It's not bashing. It's meant to, point out stuff that I'd like to see better. That's all. It's no big deal. Everybody can have an opinion. It's all in how you present that opinion and how you reply to it. No, and some people, sorry to cut you off there, Jack, but just some people don't get that on Twitter. Sometimes I like to amuse myself. I'm actually chuckling inside and they think they're getting under my skin, but yeah.
Well, George Hermosa, someone who is really kind of showing themselves to be very anti AEW. I notice all of your old 90s throwback magazines are WWE. You've never done one 90s throwback AEW magazine, George. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much burned them all, and I pretty much burned them all once that that CM Punk Jack Barry Wembley video came out. I'm like, screw all these magazines, I'm throwing them away. Even to the point where I threw away all my WWE magazines that had Chris Jericho and Edge on the cover.
Oh, well, that'd probably be a lot of them, actually. But I'm telling you, kids these days aren't going to understand the joy of checking out a three-month-old wrestling magazine because it took so long for them to print. They're not going to understand what it was like in early July to read about what happened at WrestleMania in the magazine.
Although I will say, nothing beat getting that magazine in the mail Tuesday, once a month on a Tuesday, open up the mailbox and there it is.
Oh, you did that. I just went to the store and bought them.
Oh, no, I had subscriptions to as much as I could.
I had a friend whose mom was a delivery driver and she delivered magazines at the time. And so she'd always get free magazines and she'd bring home stacks of all of them. And we'd peel through those and argue. That was before there was Twitter. We would argue about what they ranked in the magazines and things. And
the old PWI.
Good times.
What's Haku's number 8? He should be higher.
What are we ranking Haku for right now?
Just toughness.
People with two different names.
Number 8? I've been witness to a few, never mind.
Hey, listen, before we get into witnessing things, We have a news story, so I want you to save it. That's a tease, I was gonna say, gentlemen.
Wait for that story. Wait, give that tease for when you're on the Wrestling Chatter with Jack and George.
Ah, okay.
Oh, well, I was going to use it today, so that's not a good lead-in. But we do got to get Jimmy on the Wrestling Chatter one of these days. Let's talk about some news, though. AEW Forbidden Door 2024, there are reports that it may invite more people than just New Japan Pro Wrestling. There are rumors that CMLL as well as Stardom could be involved, which would, of course, bring in more companies, more stuff. George, what are your thoughts on Forbidden Door going beyond just AEW, New Japan Pro Wrestling, but inviting different places, additional places, I should say? And are there any companies you would like to see also join in on the Forbidden Door Fest?
Yeah, I'd like to see the WWE join in on the Forbidden. No, that's not going to happen. Or maybe TNA. But I mean, I've always liked it, just because when you really think about it, especially when we were as kids, and we would read those PWI magazines and the fantasy warfares with the Hogan against the Flairs and the Sting against the Warriors and Warriors and against Demolition. This is everything that we wanted in what would be the Forbidden Door, right? AEW guys against New Japan guys, New Japan guys against, you know, CMLL guys. This is really an opportunity to kind of have a lot of the dream matches that we wish we had back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm kind of even thinking out loud right now where, like, is this what we wanted Invasion to be, right? When we had the WWF and the WCW and the ECW. I know that was more storyline-based, but my point is the interest level was there. I don't know if anybody knows this stat, but the highest buy rate in the history of the WWF outside of WrestleMania was Invasion, which means there was that definite interest level in that kind of, you know, cross-brand warfare. And I'm a big fan of it. Now it's just a matter of how is AEW going to capitalize on that interest, if there is any, which I know there is, and how to maximize that interest, which I'm going to get into when we talk about the show, to just kind of make sure that make everything as big as possible. So I'm in response to your question, Jack, I'm a big fan of this kind of concept. Throw in the Mexico, throw in the Japanese women. Maybe I'd like to see something from the UK. But also at the time, these are kind of that big time promotions. They're not really considered indie feds. Like, I can't think of what's the UK version. Is it Progress? Is it
Progress? Is the first one I think of.
Is that considered indie, or is that considered like mainstream? So I think AEW is trying to touch a lot of the bases that they can, without going to a Defy, without going to you know, some of these other like GCW, or I guess, I don't know if that's a thing. But yeah, I'm really excited for this pay-per-view is the point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, Jimmy, for so long, this is kind of one of my gripes about the internet wrestling community when they complain about things, because Forbidden Door will come around and they'll make fun of the name, or they'll make fun of how it's being presented. And I'm not saying it's always done perfectly by any stretch, but this is the kind of thing that we would dream about back in the day, at least as kids, where I would remember my buddies, we would say, well, here's a list of the top 10 guys in this company. Here's a list of the top 10 guys, that company, who would beat who and all this other stuff. I love this. I love that they're doing this. Again, I'm not saying it's always done perfectly, but I think it's cool we get to see it. I love the idea that they're bringing in Stardom. I love the idea that they're bringing in Mexican wrestlers and luchadors. I agree. To George's point, I was going to say I would love to see them bring in European wrestlers like Progress or whoever they can from Europe, because I feel like that would get like a big chunk of the kind of main, at least as far as I know, the main kind of continents of where pro wrestling is at its biggest, or countries, I should say. Mexico's still North America. I'm from the American education system. Cut me some slack, folks. I would absolutely love to see that as well. Just thoughts on the idea of Forbidden Door broadening its horizons, and thoughts on Forbidden Door.
No, I like the idea. I really do. And that was when you were kids, by the way, that you were dreaming of those kind of things. I was a little older, but it's apples and oranges right now. But like you said, George, I like the idea of trying to incorporate other companies and bring them together and show that wrestling is a community. Obviously, the WWE, as you said, is a long shot at best because they're just on a different planet right now. So leave them alone. Don't even bother even bringing them up. Bring in some other talent. I think the no-brainer, for me at least, and it sounds like the easy out, is TNA. because there are some really good TNA talent that I think deserves a bigger platform. They need to get out there. And that's not a shot at them and their numbers on television or anything like that. They're just some stuff. Like, I'm a big Josh Alexander guy. Mm-hmm. There's a guy that I think needs a bigger platform. I think he would benefit from something like this. And there are a lot of talents, like you said, from MLW, I'm sticking with North America because that's what I'm more familiar with. But there are a lot of talents out there that could benefit from such a concept and idea to bring talent from other companies into one to showcase them. The challenge is, in a situation like that, how do you incorporate your existing talent and don't get them all boo-boo-faced that they're not going to be on the pay-per-view? Because, you know, it's always that ego is there. You guys know that. It's, you know, somebody's going to say, well, I should have been on that pay-per-view, but they won't say it publicly, or they may keep it to themselves or say it backstage to a friend. But that's the only challenge I see, is who is going to appear on this pay-per-view? Who can you maximize to their fullest potential and get the best out of them?
Yeah, I think it's tough to say, but sometimes you don't get to be on the show. Not everyone gets to be on every show. I think that WWE for a while was doing, and it ruffled a lot of feathers. But now I think it's just, no, like, not everyone's going to get to be on every big show. And sometimes you get big blow-offs on weekly television. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and really quickly, sorry, Jack. We saw in the last two pay-per-views by respectively AEW and WWE, both great pay-per-views. It just, like we said, it felt like the AEW was maybe two matches too many. Mm-hmm. That it would have made it all those great matches that were on there stand out even more. And we saw in France that it was a five-match card.
Mm-hmm.
And they blew the roof off the place. So it doesn't, you don't have to, you know, unfortunately, not everybody's going to make it.
I'm a big fan of the five-match card, by the way. I love them.
Just to kind of add on what Jimmy just said, though, like, my biggest criticism about the last Dynasty pay-per-view was, like, do we have to have Chris Jericho involved in every single pay-per-view? Again, love the guy. I'm not going to repeat everything that I always say on a weekly basis, but I feel like we don't
have
to
do that later.
Yeah.
But
I'm like, we don't have to have him on every single, like, even if you took away that Jericho, you know, angle, that could have been something that could have easily been over like Dynamite or Collision. Something that we could have seen progress on a regular television show. And again, and my gripe that I had that I didn't even mention on the Backlash review, which you can watch right here on Wrestling Inc., was that we didn't see Sammy. Like, I would love to have Sami Zayn involved. I mean, he's obviously, I know he's Canadian, but he's French Canadian, so I would have liked to get him see that
American education system.
I would have liked to have him get that
same
French
thing.
Pop. I'm sure there would have been some very creative Sami Zayn chants if he was on Backlash as well. So again, it kind of goes to show that AEW has a little too much. Sometimes WWE's got maybe not enough, but it's just about finding that balance. And I know Triple H said a long time ago, quality over quantity, and that's kind of what they're really emphasizing right now.
And that's to say, I think all the matches on these longer cards blow it out of the water, but there's just a... I was at the roast of Tom Brady this past week, and
I'm sorry,
that was I thought it was fun, but it was
that
like
was great.
3.5 hours long. And by the end, that was a comedy show. So I'm trying to make it so people don't think I'm comparing wrestling companies, but by the end, I was kind of like, there's another person that's going to talk. Like, you're kind of like, I'm ready to go. I'm done. I'm over it.
It's still a show. It's still a presentation. It's still something that has to draw fans, and hopefully they can make it to where for the next time it draws even more people.
Yeah, sorry to sound like the old guy again, but that's what I loved about the old Dean Martin roasts that were on weekly. They were an hour long. To me, they were fun. Don Rickles, Foster Brooks, you know, every once in a while, George Carlin, whoever would be on, you know, those were fun for me. Yeah. Richard
back
Pryor, I'm a Richard
back
Pryor.
Back in my day, comedy was, yeah.
Well,
that's Tony Garea. Back in my day.
To get us back on the track, Corey Pride says, I'm not a Forbidden Door guy. I don't know these wrestlers. I don't care about these wrestlers. See, that's where, Corey, what I would say is I get where you're coming from, but at least, and again, this is maybe because I grew up watching wrestling during a time where there was two big companies and people were picking sides and things. That's where I say I want my guys, my AEW guys in this case. If it was Forbidden Door and I'm watching them against New Japan guys, if I don't know any of the New Japan guys, then I'm like, I want my AEW guys to win. It's kind of like watching the Olympics. I don't know who all the athletes are, but I want Team USA to win. That's kind of how I watch a show like Forbidden Door when I don't know who everyone is.
Yeah. One last little thing. If they could incorporate in some form or fashion before they go into this pay-per-view, already knowing who the talent is coming from outside, show us a little something that may introduce them to the audience that may not be aware of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. You want people to know who both are, but I'm just saying, if you don't know, you can still be like, yeah, team, I want my team to win. And that's how it always was. Mm-hmm. Like, again, even in the NWO versus WCW, if you were I like the NWO or I like WCW, you're always just like, I'm picking my team.
One more for the good guys.
One more for the good guys. Stephen Camp says Pacific Northwest didn't have much wrestling except WWF, WCW, right, Jack? We had wrestling. They didn't actually come to the Pacific Northwest very often.
Not a lot.
It was such a big deal. I think I want to say 2004 Unforgiven when they went to the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon for the first time, like ever.
Yep. It was absolutely a big deal when WrestleMania came to Seattle. I was very excited about that. But in the interest of time, we got to move on to our next news story. Ric Flair had a bit of an issue. It seems that he was at a restaurant. He was asked to leave. He was not happy about it and caused a bit of a scene before he left. We've heard different stories here. The only thing I know for sure is there was a TikTok video that was showing exactly what went down. And it looked like Flair was asking someone to take it outside with him. Flair later said he probably should have left before it reached that level. Jimmy, I don't really know what we're supposed to take from this. It's always unfortunate to see this kind of thing happen. Any thoughts on this? And just for funsies, any stories you can share of some out of control wrestlers? You know,
well,
let's give them a good headline for their little short clip. Out of control wrestlers.
Well, first of all, about the Ric Flair deal, you know, it's unfortunate these things happen. Obviously, there's two sides to every story. The TikTok video obviously looked a little incriminating to Rick, for lack of a better term. But it happens. These guys, they work hard. Especially the old school guys have that old school mentality with don't mess with me or we'll take it outside kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think we were getting a little bit of that. I guess Flair felt that he was being disrespected in some form or fashion. And that escalates, especially if you've had a couple of daddy sodas, which he's been known to have. I don't know. I'm not throwing it out there. I don't know the situation. Wasn't there. I only know what I saw in that little clip. And it's like that video we saw a couple of weeks ago. It sometimes takes it out of context when you don't know the whole situation, the whole story. Yeah. If you're not there, you're going to hear two different sides anyways, like anything else. But I can see where guys, especially the guys back in my day, as we said earlier, would take exception, especially when they're out having a good time with the boys and drinking. And one of the toughest guys we talk about is Haku, who, honest to God, is one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet. Really nice guy. You know, he's really got along with him really well. But if he was sitting having a few pops with the boys in a bar, you leave him alone. They want to be left alone. If you come up respectfully and say, hey, sir, would you mind if I had an autograph, you know, a lot of the times you approach them respectfully like that, they don't have a problem with it. But if you come up like Mr. Tough Guy and think you're going to get somewhere with them and try and push their buttons, it could end bad. Like, but he was the type of guy, I remember one specific incident. I don't remember exactly where, you know, I had a few daddy sodas myself, but somebody came up to him and, you know, he had the reputation and said, and this guy was looked like a big biker guy, you know, and he just, you know what? You don't look that tough to me. And, you know, he started mouthing off that way. And I went, oh, geez, this isn't going to be good. And he looked at him. He said, you know, sir, I'm going to give you a warning. I'm here having a few drinks with my friends, having a good time. Leave it alone. Let it be. Walk away. And everything will be fine. He says, oh, he started, oh, what are you, chicken and all this? He says, look, I'm going to warn you one more time. I'm here having some drinks with my friends. We're having a good time. Leave or this won't end well. Before he could spit out the next sentence, he was on the floor and it was, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. And then he sat back down and went, how are you doing? Like nothing had happened, drinking his pop. there were just some guys who, you know, Andre was another one you just didn't mess with. And you didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to do anything because, you know, everybody loved him and they did it for him. So, you know.
It's so funny to me that anyone would challenge either of these guys purely based on their. I could know nothing about Andre the Giant. He's called the Giant. Why would you pick a fight with him? Now I could imagine if you're like, yeah, a lot of people picked on Tony the Tiny Guy. I'd be like, well, he's the tiny guy. I guess right. That happens. But the Giant George, people pick on this guy. You know,
yeah, it's a big misconception where everybody says, oh, that wrestling stuff, it's the F word, you know, not the swear word, you know, the one they don't like to use. It's sports entertainment. So can these guys really fight? Yeah, they can go. Most of them anyway.
Adonde, by the way, great comment. Corderas needs his own beer brand, Daddy Soda.
No, that's Dave LaGreca's gimmick, so I'm not stealing it.
Why did he steal it? That's how you make money in this world, Jimmy. I told you, I was educated in America. You're supposed to steal people's stuff and then make money on it. That's how we trademark do things it. In the States.
So I can trademark it then. Okay.
Fun fact, no one knows the Coca-Cola formula. Therefore, it's actually not trademarked. So if you figure it out, you could sell Coca-Cola and they can't stop you.
Thought it was cocaine.
George Hermosa.
I'm on it. I'm being totally honest. I thought that was back in the day.
So this thing with Ric Flair, I think to me, the first thing I think of is it's a reminder that it's just regardless of how you get here, it's just never a good look to yell at people who are working.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate that I got on video because now I'm always wary about these things just because we kind of saw like this a little bit of an apology from Ric Flair. It's a lot of it just kind of like well, you know, maybe is he apologizing because it's on video? Is he apologizing because it came out? Or is he sincerely apologizing? Because we saw that tweet right after it actually happened about, you know, how this place disrespected him and whatnot. So I don't know. Just like you, Jack, I'm always very, very wary about these kind of stories just because, like, there's so many sides. Because there's probably more than two sides. It's probably like three or four sides that probably of the, you know, the actual truth and whatnot. So it's kind of like, how do we speculate? I'm not going to criticize Flair. Maybe he was in the right. Maybe he was in the wrong. Maybe the restaurant was being disrespectful. Maybe they weren't at all. Yeah, just be nice, people. You know, and even if you are going to be like, even if you feel disrespected, nothing feels better than to kind of have them acknowledge the disrespect, you know, like if you feel like somebody's being mean to you, you know what the best thing to do is somebody's yelling at you, not yell, because that's going to make them because I remember I was having to work in the customer service before and somebody was yelling at me and I would say like, hey, why are you yelling? And he goes, oh, cause I'm angry. And I'm like, oh, like I'm angry too, but I'm not yelling. You get your point across without having to yell. And they go, well, why are you angry? Because you're yelling at me, you know, you don't see me yelling. Like I can hear you perfectly fine. So just kind of knowing that you're in a certain state of mind and they're not kind of going down to your level, either they're going to bow out first or they're going to realize like, oh, like I am below the level of what I maybe should be at. And then they're going to try to kind of realize the error of their own ways, you know? So yeah, I'm a big, trying to like always kind of solve the confrontation without having to get there. Mm-hmm. But I know sometimes it does have to get escalated and that's unfortunate, but
you know. Unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't work, George, because when you do that, it just, like you said, gets under their skin so much more. We really quick, if you don't mind, that just the other day has nothing to do with wrestling. My wife and I went to the bank just to hit the machine, the bank machine really quick. And the parking lot was empty. And I was like, oh, this is unusual. I said, just pull up front and I'll jump out, run into the machine quickly and run right back out. I wasn't more than 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. The parking lot was empty. There was nobody there. Some guy comes driving by and he starts F-bombing. Hey, you don't know this is a fire zone. You guys are illegally parked and stuff like that. And I'm like, what? I said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't realize that. Next time I'll know better. Thank you very much for telling me.
Yeah.
And he squealed off screaming, F you. And he got so hot because I don't know what he was trying to do, but he got more upset than I was. That's for sure.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was at the grocery store yesterday and some guy was leaving and he was cussing up a storm at somebody. He was very angry about something. I just remember thinking, what could happen at the grocery store that makes you that upset? But I don't know. We all have our own battles, I guess.
Were the bananas past expiry date? What the
hell? I don't know. Yeah. He was.
I'd be pretty upset.
Very upset. And let me tell you, I made sure to stop what I was doing and watch the whole thing because I am a looky.
Did you pull out the old TikTok?
I got to the point, I'm at that point where I don't even hide it anymore. I just kind of cross my arms and I just stare.
Yeah.
what's going to happen? Where's this going?
Yeah. And then they tell you, what are you looking at? What do you think?
I'm looking at the show, baby. What's going to happen? This is crazy.
And I didn't have to buy a ticket.
Stephen Camp says, I work at the supermarket. People get mad about over everything. You know, who'd have thought? So let's talk about this show. Before we do, though, as always, I want to go ahead and thank everybody who is joining us. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review. We've been getting a couple 5-star reviews. Appreciate y'all. If you're here in the chat, like I Am Error or Majestic Marie, Stephen Camp, Beer Money, Corey Pride, Tommy, oh, whoa, Danny Cochran, Daniel Barry, Brianne and Pat and Peter P and Carl, your boy Jimmy is in the chat. Peter Joseph, oh, cool, always leaving a comment on our YouTube videos. Appreciate you, Peter. Scott Langford, stalking you with the little dog emoji, always getting a shout out. Secular Belt, by the way, asked about Motor City Machine Guns. They did not show up, unfortunately. Can't wait for that to happen. Actually, I don't know if that's they haven't gotten their like Is All Elite logo yet, so I don't know. But Fernando, Cosmic Harmony, Johnny Beans, and Jonathan Torres, Steven Tardis, and Sean as well. You guys, lots of folks here. Chad W, Carlos, and you know what? At this point, I don't know. Do we have any lurkers in here? I feel like everyone's in the chat. If you're lurking, happy you're here. But if you're not lurking, thanks for chatting with us. We're going to talk about some pro wrestling. Elliot is lurking. Good to see you, Elliot. Thanks for lurking. Appreciate you. We're going to start this review with the man who is emblazoned on Jimmy Corderas's shirt. Orange Cassidy takes on Trent Beretta. This match comes from Trent feeling Orange Cassidy is selfish and ending former friend Chuck Taylor's career. Match starts fast and goes pretty hard and into the crowd. Eventually, Trent starts beating up Orange Cassidy pretty good until he removes the turnbuckle pad. Orange Cassidy does the same, but it's Orange Cassidy that gets the win after his exposed turnbuckle pad is the one that gets hit. Post-match, Trent attacks Orange Cassidy until Don Callis and Chris Statlander separate the two. Jimmy, what I really appreciated about this one, I want your thoughts on the whole thing, but what I really appreciated about this one that sometimes I think it's overlooked and it's something that we critique kind of often on the show is these are two guys that are supposed to hate each other. And the match felt like two guys who hated each other, not like just two pro wrestlers who were having a wrestling match.
No, I agree with that. Of course, my only critiques, if I will, the beginning of the match where they went outside, they were so long out there that it just lost some flavor for me. It just, you know, if you're not going to enforce that 10 count rule, if you're not going to enforce any rules that are in place, the rules don't matter.
Yeah.
That was the only, like that, two things. It was kind of like bookend with two things. Then once they got back in the ring, I was completely fine with what they did. I liked the way they did the finish because it kind of reminded me of that old Eddie Guerrero lie, cheat, and steal, but I could cheat better than you to steal a victory. So it kind of, I like that idea. The ending, the aftermath, the pile driver on the steps, I was like, oh, and then he did that deal with the frame of the
catapult
ring
thing.
Catapult, yeah, into the, and the issue I had was he should have been laid out.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, I know some people say, well, it's a different era. They would have been laid out. No, you should be in this era too. That was devastating what he did to him. And then have Don Callis come over and kind of protect him and want to do that sort of thing. And Statlander as well. And make it look like it's concerned, because when babyfaces get in that kind of peril, then there's sympathy on them. It's a different kind of sympathy that they have for him. Trent Beretta's facials were actually really good. I liked his facials in this as well. But it's like, again, the little things that need to be, the nuts and bolts that need to be tightened. That I would have preferred that instead of him getting helped up. Didn't even get helped up, really. He got up under his own steam, and that kind of didn't sit well with me. But the body of the match when it was in the ring was fine because, like you said, it looked like a fight.
We argue a lot on this one, Jimmy. I think I agree with you across the board. I will say I knew you were going to comment on them being outside of the ring, and I get where you're coming from. I feel like in this one, I let it slide because it made it feel like they hated each other more, but I 100% get what you're saying, and I'm not going to argue that.
The only reason why I didn't like it, especially in this particular case, was because what was to come later that night.
You want to know why I didn't like it?
Let me get to you. I got a point.
Why can't we be friends?
This is the one time, George, I was going to agree. Me and Jimmy were going to agree. There was harmony in the room, and then you come bulldozing.
I'm heated. That's why. You're I can't heated? Wait to get
Fine.
It out.
Fine, George. Why did you hate it?
Because just like 15 seconds before, you had Edge come in and say, oh, I talked to Tony Khan, who's in Jacksonville. He just made my match a no-holds-barred match. And lo and behold, like right when the match starts, you already see them in the crowd brawling. I'm like, that completely, like, this means nothing right now. Like, I don't know why they're even there. I do agree with the fact that I do like it's more brawling style. I don't want to see no holds. We talked about this in the first match of Backlash where that was just kind of a pure street fight. And, like, I don't mind that they went into the crowd. I just don't like that Adam Copeland just said that his match was going to be no holds barred. Number two, and again, I know a pile driver is like, now it means nothing in AEW, but I remember a time there what it did mean something. So I just hate the fact that it's just kind of like a transitional move. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 1000% Jimmy, like he got pile driven on the steps, and then he did that little thing, the catapult thing that Arn Anderson did all the time, and he just like I'm thinking like this guy should be almost dead, and he's sitting there getting up. My biggest beef with this match, and it's just maybe not a lot of wrestling. I think a lot of wrestling is great, to be honest with you, is I don't think people realize how subliminal professional wrestling is. It's something I didn't really realize as much as I did when I personally started, you know, training to be a wrestler. Like I was never like, oh, I want to do 450s and whatever, but I, you know, a lot of it was like, let's learn the basic, let's learn the chain wrestling, let's learn all that stuff. And a lot of it was like, why do we have to learn that stuff? Because you're setting the tone. People don't realize just how like hidden, there's like a hidden code in some ways when it comes to pro wrestling. You do something now to make it mean more later, whether it's later in the match, whether it's later in 6 months, whether it's in 2 years, you do all these things to make it mean something. So the fact that they're just, I'm just going to throw out a pile driver just for nothing. Like you don't realize how impactful that is, but on the opposite end to make people want to tune out. And yeah, I just, when I saw that, I'm like, man, you got this thing going, dude, make it bigger, like make it mean something. All these moves that you guys are doing, all these like pile drivers on the steps, and it just means nothing. Like people don't realize that it just, man, like I know it was frustrating. I liked the match, but a lot of the things that surrounded the match, it was just like, like what are we doing here?
Really quickly, if I can, too, at the beginning of the match, before the bell even rings, if they fought up into the crowd, you would have got the same effect, and not lose that we have rules here that have to be enforced or anything like that. That's all it takes. Just do it before the match starts, and then once you get back in the ring, ring the bell, start the match.
I do like that. I think that, I'll be honest, it didn't bother me that Adam Copeland said that before. That didn't take anything out for me. So that part didn't really bother me that much. But I will say where I think Jimmy and I agree a lot on this. Now I'm forgetting the points I wanted to talk about. But I do think at the end, the pile driver, What bugged me about the little catapult move he did is just visually it felt very lackluster after a pile driver onto stairs. And so let's take like how we view these moves out of it. It just felt like a pile driver onto stairs and then doing the little catapult felt like he did a concerto to someone and then hit him with a little cookie sheet. You know, like, well, what is that? Like that, like you already did the move, like just let the move sit instead of trying to do something else. And I agree. I think that, not only do I think Orange Cassidy should have needed help up, but I agree with Beer Money here, who says thought Trent never should have lost. Orange doesn't need the win, and he looks strong walking out. I agree. I feel like with the trajectory of what Trent is doing, a strong win would have made him a much bigger deal going forward, as opposed to losing here, Jimmy.
Yeah, why don't you use the pile driver on the steps as a move on the outside and have him see him struggling to roll him back into the ring and have that as a finish? Mm-hmm. Why not? You know, because on anything thrown into the steps or anything like that is not a disqualification because and people wonder why it wasn't it wouldn't it be a disqualification because the steps are part of the set, just like the protective rails and the guardrails and the announce table, everything like that is part of the set, so it's considered part of the ring. If you throw someone into a ring post, you know, that's not a DQ, but if you were able to pick up a ring post and hit it with it, now it's a different story. So it's considered part of the ring setup. So use that. Why not?
There was so many, there's so much good story in this match that just kind of like, it just didn't leave anything open for a sequel. You know, it's like you had so much room and so much, you know, depth there, but without having to fill it in, like it's just words on a piece of paper as opposed to actually, you know, continuing with the story.
Yeah, I feel like they could have got more mileage out of Trent winning. We'll see where it goes. I do like that Trent's has something going, but I would, like I said, I think a dominant display by him would have been good. Corey Pride says, Jack just discovered why Orange Cassidy is a crappy wrestler. I disagree. I think Orange Cassidy is great.
I don't think anything
that happened here or even the things we're saying say he's not a good wrestler. These are just little things that I think, as Jimmy would say, tighten the screws. In the end, I like this. Like I said, I just felt like there was a lot of stuff that, I wish they talked about, and George, I want your thoughts on this. Orange Cassidy has been somewhat palling around with Don Callis, and he also kind of cheated to win. Is there an influence of Don Callis we're starting to see on Orange Cassidy?
I think so, but again, it goes back to what Jimmy said, and I would have loved for this to happen, is like, just so they can have more depth to the story, is, yeah, lay out Orange Cassidy, and Don Callis comes in and, like, you know, kind of, like, I would have loved to see that, just to kind of add more mystique to the story. I do think there's something to that, because we don't really see Orange Cassidy ever really cheat to win. He find ways to win, which is always cool, but the fact that he had to cheat to win, that kind of does show like what is kind of going on with this Don Callis thing. There's a lot of things that happen in this segment that I feel like it could have been better presented. But overall, like I mean, I think it's a step in the right direction. I just feel like it could have been a lot bigger than what it is.
Later in the night, Orange Cassidy's getting looked at in the trainer's room, and Rocky Romero says if he beats Jay White tonight, they'll get a trios title shot. Later, Pac is getting interviewed, but gets cut off by the Bang Bang Gang. We end up getting Jay White versus Rocky Romero, and it's a back and forth. Rocky makes a fight out of it, but Jay White gets a strong win. Bullet Club Gold attacks Rocky afterwards, and Pac chases them off. Jimmy, I thought this was a great way to get Jay White a win. I thought the match was fun. I think Rocky Romero is a very fun person to have on TV as well. I was kind of surprised, though. It felt like this was setting up for a trios match, but Rocky Romero lost, so it doesn't look like that's happening. I thought that was kind of an interesting tease to not necessarily go anywhere.
No, it's an interesting tease, but then again, that throws people off a little bit because that's what they were expecting, and sometimes when you don't give them what they're expecting, they go, oh, you got me, and I like getting got sometimes. But Jay White, though, this is a guy that, now I think it's time to slowly transition him away and make him a single superstar. This guy is, you know, this guy's got all the tools. He can talk. He can go in the ring. He's got great in-ring psychology. Let's kind of break him away. Don't do the flip the switch and do it right away. Take your time. Tell a nice little story and get him out there and into singles competition. Maybe challenge for one of the titles. Maybe he's a good contender for Edge down the road.
Yeah, Majestic Marie says Jay White versus Pac will be cool, though. George, I think Jay White could be one of the top stars in AEW. I think he's great on the microphone. He wrestles well. I think he's got an interesting look. I think he could be one of those guys that's at the very top of the card. But I think this is also a great way to keep him busy until an opening at the top of the card comes up. What are your thoughts on his performance tonight and in this situation?
His performance, I think, was great. I know I do see a lot of criticism on the old app, which, by the way, like Max Caster gave a great interview, and he said, like, you know, Twitter isn't a real place. Like, people think it is, and it's really not. I put that. He retweeted it. It was great. But it's true, because, like, I see a lot of criticism, like, oh, JY should be here. You know, first off, a lot of people were saying, like, oh, if he signed with WWF, he'd be feuding with The Miz, which, by the way, I think is a total upgrade. But that's kind of what they do to the newer guys. But, you know, now they're wasting him in AEW. Listen, I don't know how long his contract is, but however long it is, it's a really long time. Like, what's the rush? Whether he gets the push 6 months, a year from now, yeah, they're keeping him busy. Like, he's on TV almost every week. He's a champion. They finally combined the championships that did not need to be two separate ones. And he's getting his time. I think it's great. I think what he's doing is great. It's only a matter of time, because I think that guy is going to be huge. Also, to kind of jump on the Rocky Romero backstage segments, dude, read the room. You wanna get a six-man title shot to have you, Will Orange and Trent as a team? Dude, did you not just see what just happened? Like, what the hell, Rocky? Swing and a miss, dude.
Yeah, that was kind of I get why they did that, but it was kind of like did you not? Like, he's literally getting iced up because of what just happened to him because of Trent. Jimmy, I saw you on Twitter. I know you're very high on Jay White also. Can you just talk about the comments George made about how, like, some people, like, someone's being wasted or whatever, but I hear that and I'm like, not everyone can be challenging for the world title every week. You need something for people to do. Just because Jay White's not in the world title picture doesn't mean he's being wasted.
No, he's not being wasted, because he's maximizing all his minutes on television and in the ring. And that's what it's all about. Whatever role you're given, like you said, Jack, everybody can't be in that main title picture or on the top of the card. Some guys have to fill the middle. Like, back in the day, it was the Intercontinental Championship that was defended on every house show. It was the workhorse championship. And you had your workhorse guys in the middle of the card that used to deliver night in and night out on the road. Jay White is that kind of guy, and make himself relevant and get people invested in him, which he's already done. And he's doing a great job at it. So his time will come. He just needs to be patient for when that opening comes, and they can, you know, find a nice little story to tell for him and have it make sense, as opposed to, okay, he's ready, let's put him in.
You think of some of the biggest stars in the history of the business. Were they the top guy within 6 months or a year of them coming to the company? Like, yeah, there's exceptions to the rule, but, like, you know, Austin wasn't the guy after 6 months.
Cody Rhodes didn't win the title for a few years.
Look at that. I mean, he lost last year at WrestleMania. I'm just saying, like, people really have to be patient when it comes to a lot of things. It's not like we're seeing Jay White, you know, shovel horse manure on a weekly basis. Like, the guy's going out there. You guys want to see him in good matches? He's in good matches, and it's only going to be a matter of time. Like, I thought his mic work is amazing, or I think his mic work is amazing. I think he really showed up in his promo with MJF. But yeah, I think overall, yeah, Jay White's like, dude, there's no rush. I'm not worried about his ceiling anytime soon.
Yeah, I think Stephen Camp makes an interesting point. White lost his momentum after his feud with MJF. I agree, that loss, I think, hurt him. And that's why I'm glad he's not getting thrown right back into the title picture, because I don't want to see him get a title shot again until he can win it. And he's not going to win it right now. So if he takes another shot at the title and loses, it's going to really hurt him. So get these wins over guys like Rocky. Start building that momentum back up. I think it's a smart move there. Speaking of people getting their momentum going again, Serena Deeb comes out and cuts a promo with Tony Schiavone. She's excited about her match at Double or Nothing against Toni Storm for the title, and she knows people don't think she can win it. She says she was away for 15 months and it was a hard fight back. Toni Storm comes out and calls Serena Deeb a charity case. Then Toni tries to punch Deeb, but Deeb blocks it and knocks the champ out. George, Serena Deeb lost the crowd for a second here, but she stuck her course, and I think at the end, they had a great segment here. I think that Serena Deeb came off looking like someone who could be a challenger, and I think that Toni Storm continues to look like a star.
Had she mentioned what she was away for? Like, I didn't know she had the seizures. Did she ever mention that before in any way?
This is my first time hearing it.
Yeah, it's my first time as well. I mean, she may have lost them, but yeah, I mean, she hooked me. You know, I was in there saying, like, oh my God, like, what a journey back. Yeah, I'm all for kind of a comeback story. Obviously, anytime Timeless Toni Storm, That's an alliteration. Anytime mm-hmm. Time with Tony Storm is on TV, like, she just totally knocks it out of the park. So yeah, I'm really excited about what these two are going to have to offer at Double or Nothing.
Yeah, Jimmy, I'm a big fan of Serena Deeb. I think she's very talented, and I think she did a good job on her promo. I'm not going to say she was The Rock tonight. You know, I'm not going to say that she's, you know, Stone Cold or anything like that. But I think as the technical, I guess, like Bret Hart style, I'm a technical wrestler and I want to win and I'm telling a story. I thought that I think that something she did very well was she did the thing where she starts off at a lower tone. And then slowly as it went on, as mm-hmm. she got to the end, you could tell she was kind of picking up the energy. And I thought that that was really well done.
No, it was really well done. And what she did in the process is tell her story, why she was away for a little while, so people understand what was going on with her personally, and then elevated that tension level, as you said, like, I'm back to win this title. I want to, you know, be in the title picture and that sort of thing. If I have one little critique, and it's not against her mm-hmm. or Tony Schiavone in this interview, my problem is, and I know they do it elsewhere as well, the shot of them on the stage with the crowd in the background. I understand why they do it. They want to get the crowd reaction in the background and have them in the shot, but you can accomplish the same thing in the ring where everybody around you can see you as opposed to seeing your back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back, everybody's mm-hmm. seeing your back. When you do it in the ring, more people can see your face. If they have the Tron on, that's, you know, it's not the same thing. It loses some of the connection with the live audience. That's the only thing from a presentation standpoint. Other than that, I thought it was just fine. That knockout punch with Tony Storm would have meant so much more if it was in the ring and it happened. And again, more people get to see it kind of close up as opposed to being far off to the side. But other than that, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, hopefully this one delivers. I'd like to see them do really well. Mariah May comes out and she faces Harley Cameron next, back and forth until Saraya tries to get involved. Mariah May punches out Saraya and then beats Harley Cameron. May gets the win, but Cameron and Saraya attack May until Shirakawa runs out and they make the save and get another champagne party. George, I'm of two minds of this. I love that Harley Cameron's back on TV. I love we're getting another match with the women's division and they're slowly building this up a little bit, but this is the second time I believe we've had a champagne party with these two, and even on commentary Don Callis literally said, what is going on? I would love for someone to explain this. I know I could look it up, but we literally have a team of people who are supposed to help me understand this. What's going on with the champagne party?
I have three words: I don't know. No, I mean, because we saw it a couple weeks ago. Like, what does it mean? Like, I know it's part of their presentation that they had at Stardom. I think the Club Venus was a thing, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like and even like with like the kissing thing, like, what are they trying to imply? Something? Is that just something they do for fun? Is that, you know, there's a lot of questions here. Do you have, you know, I know somebody in the chat kind of asked, like, why didn't Mariah come help Tony Storm? My guess is because she was getting ready for her match. Why didn't Tony Storm come out and help Mariah May? Because she was still suffering from what happened with Serena Deeb. So, I mean, I feel like that's questions, opening the questions that were already, you know, closed. So I don't think there was any kind of wondering there. But, yeah, like, are they going to be more of a tag team? Because I know when she was in the corner of Mina Shirakawa a couple of weeks ago for her match, she was in like regular clothes. But then mm-hmm. when she wrestles, she comes out as, you know, like kind of a Tony Storm cosplay. So yeah, there's a lot of things going on that I do wish there was a little bit more clarity when it comes to what they're trying to maybe accomplish with these segments. I like the in-ring action. I'm never complaining about Mariah's. I think Harley Cameron looked great. I know this was kind of like her biggest spotlight when it comes to maybe having a longer wrestling match and, you know, for longer than 5, 6, 7 minutes. So I thought she looked great. I think she plays her heel character really, really well. I think Saraya does as well. I think she's great at like interacting with the audience when it comes to kind of pushing her heel character. But yeah, I do wish there was a little bit more clarity as far as all the things that were going on. I feel like it's too many things going on. And if there is too many things going on, make sure they all have, or make sure they all make sense.
Yeah. George, you echo a lot of my thoughts here that I think Mariah May is a superstar that they're going to have on their hands. I don't understand the two different characters she's playing at the same time. And Jimmy, again, I know people can say you could look up what's going on, and I certainly can, and I've heard about it because I talk about it on the show, but I always use the example, if a wrestler came out and another one came to save them and one of them did the too sweet thing and the other one hit him with the too sweet, someone would say, oh, that's because they're part of the Bullet Club, or that's because they have a tie in Japan, or whatever the case is. But literally they're telling me, I don't know what this is. So as a viewer, if they don't know what this is, I'm not supposed to know what this is, but this is, but this is the second week in a row now that it's happened, or not second week in a row, but it's the second week that it's happened, not to mention the time she came out for Shirakawa's match. It just, something needs to be explained here, because the way the show is presenting it is the show is saying, we don't know what this is.
Right. And you shouldn't have to have your audience to give them that impression that, well, if you don't know, just Google it, kids. You know, you don't want to do that. You want people to know. You want people to be aware of what the connection is between these two superstars and where did it start and what is it, like you said, with the champagne party and all that sort of stuff and the other little things that they're planting there. But if the audience doesn't know and your commentary team doesn't know, then who can explain it to them? The actual superstars themselves. So instead of putting him in a match, which the match was good. I really liked the match. I thought it was a really good match. Solid outing by the ladies. But if you don't tell that backstory, at least allow them to tell the story on what their relationship is and how they got together, then how are we going to know if the announced team or nobody else is able to explain it to you? So they have to do it themselves. And maybe that would help the audience get more invested in them, whatever the story may be, whether it's in a babyface perspective or a heel perspective, whatever it may be, they have to explain it.
Yeah. Because it's like I said, as soon as they say, I don't know, then you're telling me the show is saying, I don't know. And if the show is saying, I don't know, then at some point you got to explain to me what this is. Because I shouldn't be doing more work than the on-air characters to figure out what this
and
it, is.
And it's not even that. It's not even just that. Because, I mean, there are instances where maybe the commentators don't know. But at least sometimes they make it a good, they do a good job and leave us wanting more. Right. What is going to happen next week? You know, and but they don't do that. It's just like, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know either. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at least make it in a way where it's like, oh, like, give me something to look forward to in order to when we find out what exactly is going on.
It reminds me of my mom. When she used to ask me when I was younger, she'd ask me a question and I'd say, well, I don't know. And she would answer back, well, if you don't know, who know? You know?
Right. Yeah. It's I relate. I hate comparing to WWE because people get crabby, but it's I asked on SmackDown about I asked Matt Coon about how they have the QR codes and how come people are so interested in the QR codes, but they're so against looking things up. And I think in WWE, the QR codes is presented as a mystery that we need to figure out. Where this is more presented as I don't know what's going on. This is weird, you know, and it's being presented. If that makes sense, like the commentary is like, that's weird. What's going on? We'll have to figure that out. This is strange. Sorry. You know, like it's part of the story where this feels more like, I don't know.
Yeah. And they're supposed to be aware. And this has happened for a couple of weeks now. And we're still getting the same from the commentary team where they're saying they don't know after a couple of weeks. So,
yeah. So, hopefully we get some answers to that because I like the pieces. I want to see it put together. And by the way, I want to let Majestic Marino, I absolutely see your super chat, but we're going to wait till we talk about that segment of the show, which is at the end. So you're going to have to stick around. Sorry. We got Swerve Strickland, the champ, coming out, and he says that he is ready to fight Christian Cage comes out and says he's going to take something from Swerve every week until their match when he takes their title. Then he says that he's going to take the gold teeth from Swerve, but the Mogul Embassy show up and we get a Kendrick and Drake reference before referencing Christian's I Quit match. That's when Mogul Embassy betrays Swerve's and beat him down. Jimmy, this was, I loved this in every sense of the word. I thought they pulled from history. I thought they, it was entertaining. They used current references that were clever. And also, while he didn't take the gold teeth, he did take something. He took the Mogul Embassy from Swerve. So Christian's right. He's still taking something from Swerve every single week.
That was a great observation that he is taking still something. And Christian is just a master at how to generate heat from an audience, especially in this day and age where you see a, you know, a lot of fans are out there and they see a great heel and they go, oh, I like that guy. He's doing a great job as a heel. Instead of sitting back and going, you know what? What a real SOB, man. I can't wait to see this guy get his butt kicked and that sort of thing. So he's awesome at that. And his little facial expressions, that smile that he did, it, you know, I know a lot of people out there go, well, I saw that coming a mile away. Who cares if you saw it coming a mile away? It's all in how it was presented. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was, it came off well. He got beat down again. Here's your champion having to fight from underneath.
Yes.
And that's what people want to see, a babyface rise above. And this is what's going to happen here. I'm assuming I don't see Christian becoming champion, but still, it's a good foe for him to until he gets to the next challenger.
I'm glad you said that about fighting from underneath, because I've seen a lot of people say Swerve getting beat up every week makes him look bad, but that's the role he's in. He's supposed to get beat up every week and look like the underdog that needs to fight from underneath. If he is beating up Christian, especially in a match, I think similar to AJ and Cody Rhodes recently, we all assume Swerve is winning this one, you know? So like, it's okay. I feel like for him to take L's along the road. George, I want your thoughts on this. I want your thoughts on just how talented Christian is and Swerve as well, as making a very short rivalry seem very heated, very fast, but also noticeably absent Prince Nana.
So I want to say, I think I said it last week and I feel like I'm going to get canceled now. I said that Prince, I'm tired of seeing all the dancing. Right, Nana comes out, he dances, whatever. And I feel like
I'm gonna turn off your screen. So
now, if you tell me Edmonton's just a lame city, okay, fine. I don't know, I've never been there, but I feel like Swerve didn't get much of a reaction when he came out, and it kind of took me out a little bit because I'm like, dude, this guy's the world champion, and like it feels like, you know, without Nana there, almost as if like his interest was being defined by his manager, and I feel like that's why I said he danced too much, because I feel like he's so much more talented than a dance. He shouldn't be defined by a dance, same way Daniel Bryan proved that he's more talented than just, you know, the things in the air. But like you said, nothing taken away from Swerve, nothing taken away from Christian. Those guys are so talented. So I'm always already out of it by the fact that the crowd wasn't really too much into Swerve, but they got me back into it with the words that they were saying. But then I got out of it again when the Mogul Embassy just kind of showed up out of nowhere. And I'm like, wait, like now they're baby faces, but now they got back into it when, you know, they turned on Swerve. And how did nobody see this coming at all? Because I know I didn't see it coming. I mean, for freak's sake, Christian Cage and Brian Cage are related. Like, how did we not even see that? Like, like they got the same last name. Of course they're in cahoots. They're both Cages.
As the kids say, cahoots.
If I have to do one little thing, though, I hate to do this because he does a great job on the mic and he's such a great heel. The only, I think, I get where he was going with this, and he did get the desired response and getting some heat when Christian mentioned that the Edmonton Oilers would get their butts kicked and handed to them by the Vancouver Canucks and get that big boo. They started chanting "Let's go Oilers" for a very long time, and it was like they weren't focused on what was going on in front of them. It kind of took them, they wanted to just chant Oilers for a little bit. I get where we want to go, but it's kind of like when you get the CM Punk chants on AEW, you don't want that anymore.
I will say this crowd, there were a couple times where I felt like the crowd was interactive in a bad way. Like they were chanting the Oilers during Serena Deeb's interview, which as a crowd, you want to be loud, but you also don't try to hijack the show, guys. Mm-hmm. That always gets frustrating. But I really love this. EVPs implied it was their idea later. Man, Christian, I guess last thing, I am so glad that he is getting this run, because I think he is showing just how talented he is. And he's done it his whole career, but I feel like maybe it's just clicking more with me, but I feel like this is the best work Christian's ever done. I feel like this is incredible what he's been doing. And so just a masterclass, really.
It's really up there with the summer of 2011 when he was kind of going back and forth with Randy Orton. When
yeah,
he was the world heavyweight champion, like that. Those two end segments are eras of back then, and even like that was 13 years ago. For goodness sakes, like it's almost 13 years to the day when he won the world heavyweight championship when Edge retired the first time. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he's still like maybe even better now is such a testament to how just talented he is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. J.R. Smith asks, real talk, Jack, do you live with your hairstylist? I just wake up like this, you know? I just roll out of bed and it happens. Yes. we get two promos throughout the night, Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné. Willow says that Moné may get all the headlines, but Willow Nightingale is going to win the match at Double or Nothing. Later, Moné says that she can't wait to make her in-ring debut with the sport she loves, but she's going to be at the Celtics game. She's going to be throwing out the first pitch, and now she's on a whole new level. Jimmy, I think that Willow Nightingale is just a treasure, and that she is, I do not know how you cannot love this person. She is one of the most lovable people in wrestling right now. And I think we're starting to get a bit of the character Mercedes is going to be, in that I'm the star. I'm going to this game. I'm doing this stuff. I'm doing that. But the question will be, how focused is she on pro wrestling, I think, is the story that we're getting here.
That seems to be the direction. It could very well be. But Willow Nightingale, for sure, has got something that draws the audience in. She's got that it factor, and people easily gravitate towards her, and that's what you look for. And she's great in the ring, and she can go very many different styles. She could do the, like we saw this past week, she can do the hardcore stuff. She can do wrestling in the ring. She can do that all. Now we're finding out that she's finding her way on the microphone, which is a good sign. So they've got something special in Willow right now. The Mercedes leaning towards that heel side, coming off a little pompous, and you know, it's all about the Moné, and that should, you know, and that sort of stuff. It's not hitting the right notes with me right now. It almost feels forced, as opposed to coming natural. It doesn't seem like it's coming natural from her. It feels like she's portraying the heel character, as opposed to, like lately we've been talking about how organic some of the heels are. Like we talked about Christian, for example.
Yeah,
you just want to hate the guy, the way he delivers. And even we'll talk about Jericho later. But for her, it feels a little forced to me. And I just want to see a little bit more of her cockiness, for lack of a better word, but in her way, as opposed to trying to portray that, if that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely does. And George, I want your thoughts on both these promos, on what Jimmy just said. And do you think there's something to, I understand holding off the in-ring debut for a big moment for someone like Mercedes, but is there something to, like, it's hard to establish a character when we're not seeing you in the ring and not seeing how people react when you are actually wrestling, if that makes sense?
It makes sense, but I don't think so. I think the magic of pro wrestling is there's many ways to develop your character. There's many ways to tell your story. I mean, we haven't seen like Tongaloa in the ring at all, and we've so many questions regarding his presence. But yeah, I think there's so many things to tell, even without stepping in the ring. But yeah, Willow was Willow's amazing. Like I can't wait to see her journey just overall. Maybe one day, hopefully soon, she becomes, you know, the AEW Women's Champion. But she's doing her thing right now, obviously. Yeah, I do agree. I think with Mercedes, it was kind of off and on. I think when she was being a little, you know, too promo-y, if that's even a word, it's a little too much. But then she started to really show that cocky character of like, yeah, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be there. You're not going to be there. Like, either, you know, like Jack earlier today, I was at the roast of Tom Brady. You weren't. but and then And then you had Mercedes kind of get serious. And I like that side of her when she is like, you took the one thing that, you know, I can't get back, and that's time. So I don't know. She's a little hit or miss with me. I know when it's missed, I mean, she completely misses me, but when it's a hit, I'm all in. If that, you know, I don't know if that's a little too, you know, vanilla kind of like, you know, I mean, because I like her and I can't wait to see her in-ring debut. I really hoping that Willow wins this match. Like, Mercedes is such a star that I feel like there's more story to tell if she loses that first match, because everybody's expecting her to win. Everybody's expecting her to be the champion in the first time in her first match, that I think there's really something good they can do if Willow ends up with a W.
Majestic Marie with a great comment here says, if I were 6 years old, Willow would be my favorite wrestler. I'm envious of little girls who get such a great woman to look up to in wrestling these days. They are very blessed. Absolutely. I agree completely. And J.R. Smith wonders, Jimmy, just curious, is Ref and Rance on YouTube?
No. Well, that might be something to consider. Hey, thanks for the idea, J.R. Smith.
Give me a call.
Speaking of videos, Samoa Joe had a pretty cool training montage. Yeah. Says he is not a warrior that fears. He is what these men fear in the first place. Jimmy, we see a lot of training montages, but something about Samoa Joe's clicks.
It absolutely does, because we talk about feeling real. It does feel real with Joe. This is the real Joe, not the wrestler wrestling character portrayed by Samoa Joe. He looks like a legit badass, and that's the great part about it. And he is. Yeah. So he's just projecting himself. And, you know, Joe, I've met him, you know, when you meet someone outside of that environment, obviously, you know, good dude and stuff like that. But when he turned it on, he can turn it on. And now that they've allowed him, or he's being allowed to portray himself and allowing himself to explore his inner self, if that makes any sense, It's coming across well on television. That training montage video was it's one of the things AEW is starting to do a lot better.
Yeah.
And is showing these video packages that help you. If you weren't already invested in Joe, and I don't know why you wouldn't be, you are now after watching this video package, because you're going, oh, I want to see him back in the ring again soon.
George, imagine being a pro wrestling fan and not invested in Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe is great. I did meet him one time as well, and he couldn't have been more awesome. Yeah, like, he's everything that you want in a pro wrestler. The fact that he's still going, it's 2024. I think he's been wrestling for what, probably 24, 25 years, and he's still like at the top of his game. Just the other day, I think my friend was like, I'm gonna random." He's not even like a hardcore. He's just like a casual fan. He's like, you know, I feel like watching AJ Styles versus Chris Daniels versus Samoa Joe from TNA. I'm like, yeah, that was 2005. Mm-hmm. And here we are 19 years later and still talking about, you know, the fact that he just had a world title run. But yeah, just Samoa Joe is just everything right about pro wrestling. The guy can talk, the guy can walk, the guy can do anything he wants to. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he at some point in the next year or so, he gets one more world title reign.
He's so good. I would be here for it. We got Big Bill and Jericho going up against Mo Jabari and Harlan Everett. Basically, the story of the match is Big Bill does all the work, and then Jericho gets the win at the end. Post-match, Jericho cuts a promo where he gets the city's name wrong, talks about the people complaining he's on Dynamite too much by saying, I'd be on for 2 hours every week if I could, and even makes a comment about getting a high-rated match on cagematch.com. also, Tony Schiavone says Hook is coming back. Jimmy, I loved that Jericho is just leaning in to all the online criticisms that people seem to have and turning that into his character.
That's the beautiful thing about Chris Jericho. He leans into it, like you said, and he sees that people weren't buying into him as a babyface character, as the learning tree. So all of a sudden, he flipped the switch and says, you know what, I'm going to go 1980 style babyface promo, so cheesy and corny, and come off like a real, you know, SOB and just like pompous, leader, so to speak. So
yeah,
it's coming off. At first I was kind of questioning it, but he's got me tuning in now. I'm curious to see where this goes. And that's the main thing. You want people to tune back in to see where the story leads. And he's got me interested.
Yeah, George, I have said before I'm a big fan of Jericho, and I said it wasn't clicking for me. It feels like he's found a way to get it to start clicking. I think a reoccurring story with Jericho. Again, I love that it's got a lot of what was it, the Planet Champion vibe to it that Bryan Danielson did a while back when he was saying positive things like I want to help the environment, but he was doing it in a way that made you hate him for it. I
feel calling like, everybody fickle.
Yeah, I feel like Jericho is kind of leaning into that too. Like, this is for the world. It's for you. Thank you for the amazing matchup. And you're like, I hate you. Shut up.
Like, yeah, it's funny. Like, I'm a big fan of the little thing at the beginning of his entrance. The learning tree. Yeah. I don't know. Like, little things like that pop me. Like I said, I've always been a big Jericho fan. My biggest criticism was just like, you know, we don't have to have him all the time. With that said, like, you know, we're going to see him next week, apparently. But yeah, I mean, as long as there's a good story around it, I'm all for it. And this is, so far, he's turning it into a really good thing as far as, you know, you guys think he's annoying. Well, guess what? He's going to be even more annoying now. So I blame Twitter for this.
Yeah,
because you guys caused all this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is, you are the Frankenstein. He is the Frankenstein's monster, mm-hmm. Jimmy.
Yeah, he is. And the little thing you mentioned, George, about the entrance music, it's changed now, the learning tree thing. Now people, even though when he's a heel, they were singing along and buying in and they were having fun with it. Now there's no song to sing along to.
Yeah.
So right. It adds more fuel to the fire.
It's also so obnoxious that, like, the learning tree.
It sounds like a show from, like, PBS or something. Or like a segment from Sesame Street.
All you need is a guy with big hair to do paintings and show you how to
Adam Copeland has a match against Brody King for the TNT title. Copeland says in the beginning of the show he's not feeling well since Buddy Matthews, but he's going to get a clear head with a no DQ win over Brody King. Malachi Black also makes a video about Adam Copeland. Match is bloody, hard-hitting. Ends with Copeland getting the win and retaining the title. After the match, Brody beats up Copeland until O'Reilly comes out and fights off the big man. Afterwards, Copeland thanks Kyle O'Reilly, and O'Reilly gets a title shot for the TNT Championship on Collision in his hometown. George, it's how do you feel about Adam Copeland and his run in AEW? I feel like because he didn't come in with such a bang and like being treated as a star, he got a lot of criticisms, and maybe understandably so. But if you look at it objectively as a character build and having matches, getting wins, starting on maybe the second show, like the Collisions, building up wins there, getting to a title, now in the main event, I feel like the way they've built him has been phenomenal, and he's having great matches.
Anybody that criticizes Edge from maybe going from there to here, I think just it doesn't know anything about maybe like anyone, about maybe psychology in general, just because you have somebody like Edge who did anything and everything that there is to do with the WWE. Like, what more is there for him to accomplish in the WWE? Like, even when he came back, he had probably one of the top three pops of all time at Royal Rumble 2020. He went on to main event WrestleMania the next year. Like, what is there more for him to do? So he comes to AEW and is pretty much doing everything that he wants to do. And you can see that. You can see that he's having fun out there with some of these guys that, you know, we normally haven't really seen in the spotlight before, whether it's with Brody King or, you know, Buddy Matthews last week. We're seeing just him go on to face like all these great guys and just flat out wrestle. Like, I know this was like more of a street fight, so yeah, you know, obviously there was more to work with. And like Brody King, like, oh my god, like a wise man once said, Brody King could be the big scary monster for AEW for the next 10 years. And I could not agree more. So I really like this matchup. Obviously Brody King bled like a, you know, with a crimson mask, I like to call it. But yeah, like I said, I know Edge is having fun, or Adam Copeland, and I see that. And that's what makes it fun. He's having fun, so I'm going to have fun watching it.
Yeah, Brody, you know, at Real Jack Farmer, I believe, was the one who said that line. I do believe that. I, you know, Jimmy, I
want your thoughts. Hashtag EW Dynamite.
I do. You know, Jimmy, I want your thoughts on the match and how everything went. I do believe, and I've said it before, Brody King, I hate to compare him, I'm using this name as an example. I'm not going to say he's going to have the same career as the guy, but I could see him being AEW's Undertaker, and that he's the big, scary, mythical person who someone comes out and says, you're going to go one-on-one with Brody King, and everyone's terrified. Or, you know, I'm not saying he's going to have the same level of career, but he could be the big, scary monster for an AEW. I think for a very long time, he if he had a gong to kind of kick off his entrance theme, you know what I mean? Something like, I feel like he's the guy that the lights go out, his music hits, and the guys go, oh, it's that guy. I feel like he could fit that role.
I get where you're coming from, George, but those are some big shoes to fill because, you know, that is a, you need that character as well. Obviously, much more than just, hey, he's the big tough guy that you got to go through if you want to get anywhere in this company. And he can be that guy, but you have to have also, you know, as they say, here's where you make your money. It's not just your body and how physical you are. You have to be able to portray facial and emotions. And it's hard to see through that crimson mask tonight. The only time I think I've seen anybody more bloody was when Eddie faced JBL, that one match. Oh, my goodness.
From Los Angeles, California?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was when people were legit, you know, checking on Eddie to make sure he was okay. But as far as Brody King, yes, the guy's got a future. Yeah. He definitely does. Now, what I think like to see him do is take some veteran advice, maybe from a guy like Big Show because he's there, maybe from a guy like Mark Henry. Mark Henry has a great mind that could help him along and maybe make him mature into the kind of monster that they should have on that roster that looks like unbeatable.
Yeah.
Because he's there. And as for Edge, like you guys mentioned, it translates. You can see it. You can feel it. A couple of weeks ago when he cut that promo in the ring, that rah-rah speech, you could feel the emotion coming through because it was genuine. And you could see that he's genuinely having fun. And he is able to teach this young generation now how to sell things. There's a lot of times where he does things where he's on the offense, giving a big move. But because of the impact, he's also selling as well, which makes total sense if you think about it. You know, so there's little things that he can teach here's a guy who could be a mentor for a lot of guys. He's a learning tree. Absolutely. Maybe there's something there. Ooh.
Absolutely. Ooh. And, Mike Martin makes a comment. The Undertaker wasn't going to toy stores looking for toys, Jack. I'm not saying that he's going to be the Undertaker. I just mean the role that the Undertaker played as a character in that universe, you could have him playing a similar role is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they are. Look, if you said Undertaker was the greatest of all time, I think you could make an argument for that. I'm never going to say anyone's going to be that. That's unfair. I'm just saying that role of the big, scary monster. You could also say the Kane if you wanted to or whoever.
Or like a Bruiser Brody.
Yeah, that guy, the big, scary monster character, I think.
I like that comparison better. Honestly, no offense, Jack.
Yeah, no, I I'm not saying he's going to come out in all black with a hat and lightning strike. Right. I'm just saying,
no, of course,
the big the monster, the scary guy, the guy.
The gong should be reserved for one man and one man only, and that's it.
You don't give the gong to anybody
else. Or the glass break or anything like that, just
right. You should do both gong,
and then, the pendulum hits the bell first and then swings into the glass,
everything. Every single start that everyone has all at once. We get to the last thing on this week's event, this week's show. The Elite show up and park in Tony Khan's parking spot. Last week after attacking Omega, we get a video package of Jack Perry saying Omega was not the hero they needed him to be. So now AEW doesn't need him and AEW will change without him. And he says, we all have to sacrifice, and Kenny Omega just made his. We also get a promotional package for the Elite. Later, from a hospital bed, Kenny says that there's going to be anarchy in the arena, Elite versus AEW, FTR plus two mystery opponents. At the end of the show, Okada says, hey, Kenny, get well soon. Matt Jackson says Tony Khan is the best boss ever, but he got in the Elite's way. They accept anarchy in the arena, so FDR tells them their partners are Eddie Kingston and Brian Danielson before we get some fisticuffs. Jimmy, I feel like this is one of those things where I like where we got. I like the general premise. I do feel hindsight 2020 probably could have made this feel bigger throughout the show. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, Jack, big time, because the announcers who helped tell the stories throughout the show, not during matches, in between matches or whatever, you know, remember later on, there's going to be a big surprise. Kenny Omega said there'll be two more guys joining the FTR. Who are they going to be? You know, build it up throughout the shows. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's a big letdown to see Eddie Kingston and especially Bryan Danielson come out to complete that side of the equation. I don't know what these parameters are, what the deal is with it. We talked about them earlier, the Motor City Machine Guns. I think that would have been a nice surprise and something different to introduce them into AEW. You know, when you talk about surprises, or they do surprises all the time. This one, if it was MCMG, I think it would have been a nice touch. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. I just and of course ending on in a brawl, that's fine. Going off the air with chaos is okay, but just don't do it every week.
A pocket full of heaps says, was at the show tonight, had a great time. That's cool. Who got the biggest reactions? A pocket full of heap. Let me know. It was always fun to know what the, how it stands. Cause sometimes in stadium, like I think it was last Double or Nothing. I was in stadium and it was great. It was loud. Everyone was into it. And then I got back and it was like, that crowd was dead. And I was like, what? We're so loud in there. So let me know what your pocket full of heap. Let me know who your who got the biggest reactions. George, I thought Jack Perry's promo was great. I love the "we all have to sacrifice something" kind of catchphrase. I think that's a cool catchphrase that he could use going forward. I actually even like Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson as the guys. And I want to say Majestic Marie put in, as Eddie Kingston's biggest fan, I'm happy to see him on Team AEW. It didn't sit well with me that he just rolled over and took his loss to Okada. I do think these are two guys that kind of represent AEW in a lot of ways. And so I'm fine with the choice of them. I don't know. It felt like Kenny Omega announcing this from a hospital bed, kind of in a cheeky way. I feel like everyone's too cheeky about it, I guess, is the way I would phrase it. What do you think?
Oh,
you're muted.
I think Motor City Machine Guns not being announced for them, I think makes sense, because why would they be in Team AEW? Like, why would you have because I kind of expected that too. I'm like, oh, this is where they, because I know I saw somebody on Twitter put that, like, TNA put up a match between the Machine Guns and the Young Bucks from TNA. I'm like, oh, what interesting timing when it came to that. So I did kind of expect that a little bit. But yeah, now that I think about it, I'm like, hey, it wouldn't make sense. Why would they be in AEW when they've never wrestled for AEW, except for that maybe one or two times, I think it was. So I like the inclusion of Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson, especially because I know I was critical on this show on when Eddie Kingston lost to Okada, and then all of a sudden he's already getting pushed aside for Pac, and I was like, all right, no love for Eddie Kingston. So I kind of like that. The only thing I didn't really like, and just a tiny criticism, is like, do stables mean nothing anymore? Like, if I was like the rest of the BCC, I'd be like, dude, why is Moxley or why is Bryan Danielson teaming up with these jabronis? You know, like, I don't know. Because then you even had that match with that FTR lost to Moxley and Claudio. So I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like there should be more of a team thing. Maybe if it was the BCC going up against the Elite, I think that would have been pretty cool. I mean, where's Wheeler Yuta? I don't know. Is he injured?
I haven't seen him in a while. I think he's legitimately hurt.
Okay. So maybe that's when maybe you can kind of bring in Eddie Kingston or just something, you know. But I get why FTR is there. I know there's a lot of story with them and everything that's going on. I mean, but I dug overall. I dug it. I think it's a good choice to kind of have this. It's going to be a great, anarchy match at Double or Nothing. It's going to be fun. I mean, there's not really much to say as far as like breaking it down. It was good.
I think what I'm missing from this, Jimmy, and I guess we'll kind of wrap up on this part, is, again, I'm not trying to compare. It's never fair. Mm-hmm. But I needed I wish we had like the William Regal War Games. Like someone who's like, no, this is a like, where Kenny Omega kind of flippant about it. Like, yeah, so if you want to have a match, I guess we'll have a match. I've got four people to face you. And the Young Bucks like, oh, you want to have a match? Okay, I guess we'll do this. Like, I feel like both sides can't be flippant about it. Someone's got to be like, this is serious. I'm going to kill you. You know what I mean? But no side feels that way.
Yeah. And did you see the reaction of the Bucks when they introduced the two members that were going to join FTR? Did you notice the reaction?
What were their reaction?
Very little, if any. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that angst. There wasn't that,
right.
Oh no. or we shouldn't have let it get this far, or anything. You know, just show me something. Show me some emotion that you're trepidatious now about accepting this challenge or something. And I felt like I didn't get that. And
yeah,
that's where they kind of, I don't want to say they lost me completely, because I'm sure it's going to be a slobber knocker, as old, good old JR would say, but it just, it lost, like you said, it felt like, oh yeah, I got something for you. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I got something for you.
It isn't, yeah, it doesn't maybe come across as a big blood feud that's kind of going to happen. Or like, why does it need the gimmick match? You know, why can't it be just a regular 4-on-4 match?
Mm-hmm. Like I feel like this is where to George's point, if it was like a Jon Moxley cutting the promo about how they're going to fight, he would make it sound like,
ooh, yeah,
I'm gonna kill you. This is very serious. Where again, it came off very like, ha ha, I got you. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be a great match. I'm sure there's some storytelling. I kind of wish it felt like a little heavier.
I did like Jack Perry's promo. My only tiny criticism, and tell me if I'm being too much, please somebody tell me if I'm being too much, is he had the hair down, and then he like tied it up in the middle of the interview. That should have been something that should have been up for the whole time, and yeah, it really took me out for like a tiny bit.
I think I know why he does it. He does it in all his promos now, where he's like putting his fingers through his hair and doing this thing. When you go back to that security footage security video footage from backstage when he had the altercation with CM Punk, what was he doing the whole time Punk was talking to him?
He was fixing his hair.
He was doing this, and he kept doing this, and he kept playing with his hair and all that sort of thing. And I think that's what he's playing into a little bit. And you heard even the CM Punk chant so again tonight. Yeah. So
in Jack Perry's defense, if I had that head of hair, I'd be running my fingers through it all the time.
if I had that head of hair, I would cut it to look like this. That's a little too much for me.
Well, that does it for this week, for this AEW Dynamite. Everyone in the chat, I want to thank you guys. Fernando, Mike, Secular, April Greenwood, thanks for rolling through. Adonde, Beer Money, and Majestic Marie, appreciate you always. Before we go, Jimmy, any final thoughts, and where can the world find you online?
No, it was a fine episode. There were some hits and a few misses, but at the same time, you know, I think they're doing better at progressing storylines and getting where they want to go. And like I said earlier, the video packages do help. We didn't mention the Malachi Black one unless I fell asleep during.
I brushed over it because we were getting kind of long in the tooth here.
Which was very good as well. I liked that very much. So they're starting to hit some right notes. They just, again, they need to work on some of the little things that I think matter. But other than that, I thought a fine episode. And as far as where you can find me, Monday nights with Triple J doing an After Raw thing, here on Wednesday nights doing the After Dynamite thing. And this week I'll be on the post-SmackDown show. I'm not sure who I'll be pinch hitting for, but I'll be there. And then this week, the Roughing It Up podcast, unfortunately, due to technical difficulties and circumstances beyond our control, WWE Hall of Famer Devon Dudley couldn't get the tables. So it's just me and Brian and Narjay this week, but we had a fun episode talking about a lot of things. So check it out. And of course, my Ref and Rants, which you can catch daily. Actually, I have to plug this because, you know, it is a thing now. On the Riffin' It Up podcast, there was a little bit of JK and the Sunshine Band doing some karaoke. So yeah, that's something a little different. And the Riffin' Rants, of course, from Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms.
Well, as they say, card is always subject to change. George, any final thoughts? And where can we find you online?
All right, fine. Me and Jack will fill in for Devon. We'll fill in.
Prepare for your worst show ever.
Just prepare for the language from B-Heb. That's all.
We lost half of our subscribers from one show.
What the hell? Just overall, like I said, I'm a big something I just noticed. It's all subliminal. Like, make the little things matter, and even like make the little things, but like the big things that you think don't mean a lot can mean a lot. Like all the pile drivers. It's again, I love the moves. They're all great, but man, they can just be so much bigger. Make it a bigger deal. Like, this is the part where I think people tune out, where it's like, you make it feel like, oh, I don't have to watch this week, because then, you know, there's going to be around next week. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of little things that they need to capitalize on and make things just bigger what it is. Like, make it mean something. That's my overall opinion on Dynamite. It was a good show. You know, I know a lot of there was a lot of criticism online about like, oh, this is gonna be the worst Dynamite ever. Like, dude, come on. Like, that's just negativity for no reason. So please stop being negative. Like it's like Max Caster said and retweeted me. Twitter is not a real place, so just stop acting like it is. But yeah, overall, you can follow me on George G Hermosa, GHERMOZA, and all the social medias. Tomorrow we're actually gonna premiere the interview that me and Jack did with WCW ring announcer David Penzer. Finally was able to edit it today, and it's going to be premiering tomorrow morning on the Wrestling Chatter YouTube channel. We got Devon coming on soon. That's why he's not going to do your podcast.
Damn. Well, yeah, sorry, you got to say it like Ron Simmons. Damn. Yeah.
And I'll say testify.
You know, Dave Penzer, I asked the hard-hitting questions like, why the cummerbund? And he answers it. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. Ebony Washington, late, but I'm still glad you're here. Thanks for rolling through. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media, of course, here on Wrestling Inc. I also do Draped in Gold every Wednesday with my pal Flobo, where we talk about NXT. But also, I'm doing commentary for Prestige Wrestling next week. 5/16, and as we say, card subject to change. Got some devastating news. Josh Alexander will not be able to make it any longer, so the new match will be Shelton Benjamin versus Filthy Tom Lawler. So that'll still be a very good one. Two guys who know how to wrestle, so that'll be a fun one. You can check that out next week, and it'll be fun on IWTV. Just check it out. Just do it already. And by the way, why don't you tweet that I'm excited to hear Jack Farmer on at Wrestle Prestige do commentary so the bosses know I'm a draw. Do there you favor.
Go. And a quick shout out to Mike Martin there. Hey.
Oh yeah. Mike, I didn't hear anything, Jimmy.
I need the bigger pen.
Let me get my loud pen. We love you, Mike. Thanks for being here. Thank you, everyone. That's going to do it for us. And as of now, I'm hitting that end stream button.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.